Joe Thomas, reel 4.
Well, you see, there's a section attached to each company about 5 mules. What used to be machine gun company, but they were done away with and replaced by the Ven gun, a lighter gun altogether. The old Maxim gun was replaced, and I was on with this section of the company, and generally I was assigned either to carry spare ammunition or water panniers, that kind of thing. The other 4 mules, they were attached to the machine gun section. That was my job, was to follow up with the machine gun company of each company. Each company had its own mules, all own section of mules. There'd be probably about 20 mules to the battalion. And they weren't separate from the company. They were part of the company, see? But that was our job, to see to the mills and to follow the mills. And if we were going on exercise, we seen to the field kitchens, and they would order extra mules from the mule sections. They had these big concentration of mules and camels where you could go and order probably 20, 30 mules, 20, 30 camels, whatever you wanted. And of course, we had to supervise these to follow the company. And then, if you were going into action on a war footing, of course, you carried your spare ammunition. That was my duty, to carry 2 boxes of spare ammunition. I had 1 mule. Most men had 2 mules, but there was only 5 mules to a company. I only had the one. That was my job as a muleteer. But it was a very tricky job, really. It all depended whether you got a good mule or a bad one. If you got a good mule, he kept his nose up to your shoulder. But if you got a bad one, he was either bumping you or you were dragging him. I happened to have a good mule, and he trotted along with his nose to my shoulder. No bother at all. But he was a bad mule for grooming. His eyes were always running, his nose was always running. He looked a bag of bones. But he was an exceptionally good mule on the march, which was everything. And I was very lucky in that respect. We had these mules. That was our job. We had them to groom, look after. That was our duty first thing.
How long would that take?
Well, you would, you done it first thing of a morning. You groomed the animals, or I should say, grooming about half an hour, watered and fed with bushy, that's dry straw, and then of course you had to get your own meals, and then after that you had the animals to groom down and harness to Dublin. It more or less a morning's work. Yeah. But they used to do that, and then probably be away on the march wherever if the battalion was going out. That was, of course, if we were in barracks. See? But if you were on the march, well, your first job was the animal first. You had the animal to fodder and water first before you'd done anything. So that was it. And of course you had its load, whatever it was, you had that to see to. The ammunition, as we had 2 boxes of ammunition, as it took 2 men to work in a team. You see, there were 5 men in the team to unload the animals, and you had your ammunition to unload and stack. That was our daily routine. Barring that, I don't know. Of course, you've got your ordinary military duties on top of that. You had to be with the battalion on the parade ground and such like. When the battalion paraded, you had to be there with the animals, with the Lewis guns and such like. And of course everything had to be spick and span. It kept you pretty busy.
If you were going out in a column, whereabouts would the mules be?
Well, your mules, your Lewis gun mules followed each company. Each company had a section of Lewis guns. That is, when the Lewis guns came in, the Maxim guns were done away with, and the lighter Lewis guns came in, and you would get your air company, and then you would get your Lewis gun mules following them, and then you get your B company, and then their mules. And so it went through, as I was D company, and we were always at the rear of our battalion. That was it. Of course, you were a bit unlucky, because going through, probably the road was thick with dust, and you had a, you were 900 or 1,000 men marching in front of you. Well, you caught the thick of the dust, and you were sweating. The dust got in your eyes, stuck the eyelids, round your mouth, and of course you had puggarees and shorts, and there you were, you caked in mud with your own sweat. That was one of the drawbacks of being the rear of the column. But it's the look of the draw, I expect. There we are.
Did it have any good points, being at the end?
Well, it had its good points because you were free, you were only a small section on your own with the muleteers, eh? And you were in a small section away from the battalion. So when the battalion camped, the mules were all put together in lines, and you were a small section on your own, so that you were more or less a little bit isolated from the main company. See? So it had that bit of advantage, you see. But it was a bit of a tricky job at times, of course. But that you probably get on the march and you had a mule and your load would move. You had either two water panniers either one either side the mule, and if you hadn't got your load properly tight, it would move and wouldn't balance. And of course, then you had the job of stopping and getting these unloaded, saddled off, tightened up, and loaded up again. You had to be very careful about this kind of thing, see? Especially when you had ammunition. You had a mule's load, regulation load, was 112 pounds. Well, a box of ammunition, 56 pounds. That's a 56 pound each side of the saddle. They had to both be properly balanced. See? Of course, it took two of you to do this, because we worked in pairs, see?
How did you do it?
How did we
load it up?
Well, they had the saddles. They had the saddles and to fit the mules and the ropes. See, they were fastened onto the saddle by ropes, made especially for the job, of course. See, and just lashed to the saddle. And of course, they had to be done so that they were easily taken off quickly if you wanted them. See? Of course, it was a job you got used to.
Why did you need two men?
Well, you couldn't lift a box of ammunition by yourself. You see, you needed one man, and often if you had a bad mule, you needed three men. There was a man at the other side of the mule, because some of them were tears when you were loading them. You couldn't keep them still at all. They were here, there, and all over the place. I tell you, I had a good mule. I never used to have a great lot of bother at all. But some of them were real terrors. It was interesting that I think it was. You got more work to do than what you did if you were actually in the battalion itself, because you both had the training to do, the field training, and you had your own animals to see to. As I say, that you were you went on service, well, you had those animals to see to first. That was your first priority, was the animals. They must be seen to, and that to be tethered. You tethered them by foreleg and hind leg in lines. and then, of course, you had boucher. That was dry chop straw, which they used a lot in the East. That was brought up by camel, with these bales of boucher. You had that to get to feed your mules. You had water to find. You were kept pretty busy before ever you could get down to anything for yourself at all. So it was a pretty active job.
From
Remount Depots. Well, your ordinary mules, of course, unless anything happened to them, you kept them all the time. But if you were going on the march, they probably wanted anywhere from 30 to 40 mules. That was per carrying field kitchens, luggage, bedding, all this kind of thing. Well, then they sent to these remount depots, maybe ordered 20, 30 camels. It all depended on the size of the column that was going. And maybe 30, 40 mules. But with the remount mules, there was a muleteer, a native muleteer, came with them. They came in strings. Threes. Of course, you had to help these people to manage them. Now, these mules were not like ours. They were real tartars. They were here, there, and all over the place. You had a terrible job. But that's how they went on. But it was the same with the camels. The camels came, and they came with their own keepers. But they used to see to their own loading. A camel load would be 240 pounds, and that had to be balanced either side, the camel. And of course these people who were experts at it, a lot of them were just private people, I think, that owned these camels and lent them out to the military. Hired them, you see. But sometimes there would be as far as 30, 40 camels come up from the Raymond Depot. But of course it wasn't, unless you were going on a long march or expedition or anything of that description, or moving from one depot to another, you didn't really need them. Not to that extent, but they were always there for if you wanted them.
How did the mules and camels react?
Oh, they reacted very badly, I'm afraid. That was the mules and the camels that was brought in from the Raymount depots. They weren't the same as those. They seemed to know the difference between an Indian and an Englishman.
What would they do?
Oh, they kicked up. They kicked up, they would back out, they wouldn't let you go near them, and lash out. Sometimes some of them were. He had a terrible job.
Who did they behave best for, the Englishmen or the Indians?
Although they weren't so bad with their own keepers, but it was when they knew that we were strangers, and that's when they reacted to it, see?
How did you get on with the Indian troops? Did you meet many?
Indian troops didn't meet a great lot. Mostly the Gurkhas. The Gurkhas generally followed us. Generally had in a brigade, you would have a British regiment, a Gurkha regiment, and then an Hindu regiment and a Mahometan regiment. They were generally split up like that. And the Gurkhas, nearly always, were alongside the British troops. So really, they were the only ones that we came in physical contact with the Gurkhas. And we got very pally with a few of them, but they were really grand little chaps. But of course, a language problem was, and I was very popular with them because I was short, a 5'4" was the right height for a Gurkha. At 5'4" for a Gurkha, I was the same build as them. I was more or less pretty popular with them. We used to get on pretty well.
And what did people think of the other two, the Mohammedans and the Hindus?
Well, they used to get on. They used to get on pretty well together. But I think the idea was really to keep them apart. Not officially, but you see, on account of the religion. That's generally why you got the Gurkhas were more or less like us. They had a Hindu religion, but it didn't seem to be a fanatic religious type. So I could always rely on the Gurkha if there was any trouble, especially at religious festivities. If an Hindu festival happened to clash with a Mohammedan festival, well, that's when the tricky times started, whether they were both clashed together. Well, we knew we always had the Gurkhas there. They didn't seem to follow the full Indian fanatical religious side. See, the same as the ordinary Hindu does. Whether they do in their own country or not, I don't know, but they didn't seem to do not in the army. They were in the army as soldiers, and that was their life, was soldiering. And they didn't want anything else to interfere with their life. You could always rely on the Gurkhas.
Were you ever involved in any clashes where a Mohammedan and a Hindu festival came together?
Oh, yes. When these big festivals were on, troops were always alerted and stood by. Didn't actually clash with them, but they were placed so that if anything did happen, that one clashed with the other, the troops were there to intervene. See? Oh yes, there were several occasions during the year when the Hindu and the Mohammedan festivals do really.